SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Very good Tuesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964, if you're listening to Sirius XM online. And at the website as well, stevebick.com. And here it is, the OBS October morning. Just curious what time. 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock. Make that, today's Tuesday, right? What's wrong with me? Noon. I take it back. Not 10 o'clock. Noon. The tax show started at 10. Noon today. So actually, that's actually helpful. The two-year-olds and the horses of racing age go first, and then the yearlings immediately follow. And today, it looks like you got about 100 and, well, on paper, 141. We'll see if some of those yearlings come out. And same thing among the 54 potential HORA types, two-year-old and so forth. And then the select portion of the sale and open stock on Wednesday. And tomorrow they start at 10:30. So keeping an eye. Late this afternoon, actually, I got a late haircut today. I got to go to Bennington, and it's certainly not. Tina and I have been driving on the weekends quite a bit, actually, and you know it's a good time to be driving toward Vermont and through Vermont. Although you know the attack of the leaf peepers, and in fact. Saturday, was it Saturday we went? Or no, Sunday. We went Sunday. And we swung through Bennington and then up to Dorset. And the out-of-state plates, now technically we're out-of-state because, you know, we're from New York, but we're Washington County. It's an adjoining county to Bennington County. And I'm not sure what the county is. When you get a little further north toward Manchester, I think that's still Bennington County, but maybe not. Anyway, there were so many, and they're all driving around. They're looking for cider donuts, and it's a scene. That's the best part is, that's why Baby Boom and Funny Farm are so great. If you're looking for two. You know, shut-in movies. If you haven't seen either in years, they're so accurate. I don't consider myself, having been, having enjoyed rural New York and New England my whole life. I don't consider myself, an outsider, an interloper. But I mean, there's people they're wandering around and they're in Manchester. Luckily, most of them hadn't heard about the Dorset. You know, there's a terrific farmers market on Sundays in Dorset, and we go most Sundays. And once you got north of Manchester, nobody. People hadn't found that road, but they were going up. They were going up to the mountain up Equinox, and I've never seen so many cars lined up to drive up Mount Equinox. And in fact, I happened to have talked to a local. And I said, "You're going to be busy today." He said, "Tell me about it." He said, "I've never seen so many cars trying to get up the mountain. There's like a scenic. You drive up there. It's not like Mount Washington. Remember when you were kids? It was a big deal. You drive up to New Hampshire and go up Mount Washington. And they'd put that, it wasn't even a bumper sticker. I'm old enough that they had like a cardboard placard that was held with like wire, twisty wires. Before bumper stickers, and this car climbed Mount Washington. They still have them. The white bumper sticker with the blue and red lettering. This car climbed Mount Washington. It was a big deal. this is not Mount Washington. This is much smaller, Equinox, but it was very funny. So anyway, I'm headed to Bennington later for the Bennington haircut and the clip shop, Jenna, and so I'll get to watch at least, I don't know, 4 hours, 3.5 hours of the sale. I actually got our eyes on one yearling. But I'm glad I had the chance to mention it because I would have forgotten otherwise. It was so overwhelming yesterday. And we still have some people to talk to about Barry Abrams and Paul Pompa. And I do have some information, the specifics about Paul's services and the visitations and so forth to provide. And there's also more sad news that as we got off the air yesterday, I saw where Jay Hovde had let it be known that Gary Jones, who has been suffering himself for dementia-related illnesses and very sad, 76. Gary Jones, we got to get some, maybe Jay will join us. I know when we talked to Jay Privman this week, Jay wrote the obit. Gary Jones did get to really enjoy the Hall of Fame honor, and he had a terrific career. It was intense and had a sort of a, as Jay delineated in his obit, he was a hard charger, as they call them around NASCAR. He had a lot of good horses and a lot of success, and he packed it into, about a two decade or so plus career before he was warned that if he kept up that, that lifestyle and that hard charging, that he wouldn't live. Had a heart attack in the mid-90s, and not far thereafter retired. But some of the horses that he's associated with, Best Pal, certainly, probably the first that comes to mind, and Turkoman as well, who, outstanding. And so, it's actually pretty amazing when you look at the list and you realize how much influence his stock had on the game. Including Turkoman, including Quiet American. And of course, from a heritage standpoint, his father, Farrell Jones, and survived by his wife Joan, and of course Marty, who we've talked to many times during his training career. Now, third generation, and David, as well as some grandchildren as well. Gary Jones. And so we'll get some appreciations, and let me provide for those of you that are in proximity. And there's things that anybody that might have appreciate and wants to appreciate Paul Pompa. The arrangements are as follows. Tomorrow in South Plainfield, McCriskin Gustafson home on Plainfield Avenue, 3 to 8 is the visitation. and a mass on Thursday at Sacred Heart in South Plainfield as well, and then at Hillside Cemetery in Scotch Plains. If you want to donate something in Paul's memory, he gave a lot to New Vacations. But, you know, any racetrack charity in memory of Paul would be, you know, would be well received, to say the least. And we'll also try to get the Jones family. I'm sure, you know, I'm sure the Eddie Gregson Foundation or Karma out west, any, you know, anything in the proximity. And the same thing for Barry. I haven't seen a specific on that yet either. So, yeah, I mean, this has just been crazy. It's just feels like, you know, it just feels like it's been an assault on the senses. Well, speaking of assaults on the senses, the assault on your sensibilities watching races and understanding stewards' application of rules, that'll make you nuts. How about yesterday? And Rich Migliori is going to join us at 10. And, you know, I had plenty to discuss with Rich anyway, but the nightcap yesterday at Belmont... We ride Benji Hernandez. We like Benji a lot, and he tries hard. He tried a little too hard with the left hand yesterday. Not that it cost him, because in the nightcap, you know, in a modest claiming group, big field actually, and Dr. De Vera's Way is, you know, trying to hold on after, you know, pretty much almost a wire-to-wire effort. And Benji's going left-handed. And Mike Luzzi on Macho Boy is, you know, pursuing and ran a, you know, courageous race at a big price. It was nearly 60-1, 58-1. And There's no doubt. I mean, Hernandez comes out from about the 1.5-2 path, and he comes out a path and a half, you know, while he's using the left hand. And, you know, Luzzi perseveres, and then it happens, you know, first he gets herded, and then he gets, you know, kind of impeded. At the wire, you know, in the late, you know, the latest stage, Macho Boy gets passed, and I mean, literally, I know Andy tweeted about it because I saw what Andy had written. Andy, you know, had the right, you know, the right frame of reference, which was, if you're looking for a definition of a horse being cost a placing, this was it. I mean, this was completely discernible that whatever Dr. De Vera's Way was doing at that, you know, in those final yards in the last 150 yards, it absolutely had to have cost Macho Boy a placing. He finishes third, where it looked like, you know, he at worst would have been second. And there's no change. It's very frustrating. We'll let Rich. I don't know if Andy's going to visit today or if he's going to. Usually, you know, they raced yesterday, obviously, for the holiday. So usually Andy's, you know, day after. So maybe not till tomorrow. I haven't heard from him this morning. But I will let Rich talk about it. Rich had a really fun segment yesterday, if you were watching the Fox show, with showing how riders deal with mud and the goggles. You know, it was a wet day yesterday, and in fact, it was so bad that the wind and the rain, Monmouth ended up canceling. You didn't even have to worry about off the turf for that stake race. So that'll get rescheduled. So they didn't get a card in at all. The Jersey Shore tomorrow, by the way. Monmouth keeps sneaking in these weekday stakes, and the Jersey Shore closes that card out tomorrow, and it's a nice field. You got a nice field of 10. And Trombetta, who is like out of control. I mean, Trombetta everywhere you look, from Presque Isle to Woodbine down to Laurel and everywhere in between. He's got a pair of serious players in here. Well, you know, at least news to me, his wife's horse is a little bit of a price. But Premier Star is 2-1. As Seen on TV shows up in this spot, by the way, as well for Kelly Breen. And, you know, Kelly Breen and Ron Lombardi had a nice maiden winner over the weekend. That's part of the New York coverage. Anyway, the situation yesterday at Belmont, you know, this also would have been one of those funny situations had they taken Dr. Vera's way down. They would have elevated Beachfront, who would have been something of an undeserving winner being kissed in, to be honest. You know, I mean, he ran okay, but he would have been anointed up because all you can do is put Dr. De Vera's way behind Macho Boy. Anyway, and I'm sure that, I'm sure people bet Macho Boy at that big price too. He was 1980 to place. The favorite was off the board completely, Dangerous Edge. The Maker finished fifth. So nice mutuals, and this all could have been rearranged, frankly. What was Beachfront? Actually, Beachfront was 3-1. Beachfront was second choice. And, you know, while we're on this topic, you had a very big pick five yesterday. You know, the Naira late pick five, it continues. You know, we talk about these reduced takeout opportunities with the pick fives, and there is of course the added benefit in New York of this pick five, where the computer groups, the CAWs, are restricted from the pool. And yesterday, $6,769 pick five yesterday. And it was not a sequence. I mean, this was not the easiest horse to come up with, Dr. De Vera's way. I mean, let's assume that, you know, in ticket building, you might have had this horse. You had two favorites, or at least one favorite and a couple of second choices in the sequence. There was a horse in the sixth race that was not all that easy to find, to be honest. That was the one that if you got to that one, you impress the professor. Is that it? Impress the professor, I think. Yes, impress the professor for Phil Serpy and the Wellspring Stables team. Homebred of theirs by Tapiture, a three-year-old filly out of a Raffy's Majesty mare. Gotta love that. And impress the professor, who actually was supposed to be ridden by Charlie Marquez, is out for about a month, and Jose Lascano picked up the mount, 13-1, and was the 6th choice. So you had two second choices, a favorite, a sixth choice, and a fourth choice that won that sequence of five, and this thing paid three times the parlay, easily. And they handled just under $250,000 on the Belmont pick five. It was one of those days where, you know, I was kind of watching, and I hadn't really handicapped, but I had, you know, had the TV on, and it particularly the non-call, that that was a little, you know, kind of looked sideways at the way that came down. Should also mention the stake race at, because I saw this too, and this was later, fairly, it must have been, I don't know, 6:30, give or take, at Presque Isle. And Adam Rice and nothing worse than this desk, I'll tell you, when it comes to having to quickly reach for and find something when I start talking about it. That's the sycamore. Let's save that. There it is. Like a salt shaker. And this was the Fitz Dixon memorial for the two-year-olds. And Harry Hernandez aboard for Adam Rice. And this is Magic Oaks on the ownership. And you got 11-2. And Like a Salt Shaker had run, I thought, two, you know, decent races that, you know, seemed like, you know, he was, you know, poised maybe to take another step forward. And you got a nice price. He was 5-1 morning line. A lot of money flowing to Sky's Not Falling for Mike Trombetta. And also to Smokin' Jay. The Carlos Silva first out winner from Arlington that came in. But Like a Salt Shaker, $13 winner. A Peace and Justice, and I think I saw, looking at the sheet, this was Peace and Justice's first stake winner out of a Harlan's Holiday Mare, bred by Glenn Brock. Peace and Justice. Good for him, and good for Adam Rice, hasn't really sent out a lot of starters this year. That was just his 22nd starter, but he's got 4 wins, 3 seconds, 3/3, and this looks like a nice 2-year-old. So that ended up being the only stake because, of course, Monmouth got short-circuited. And, you know, and at Monmouth tomorrow, I mentioned the Jersey Shore. There's also what looks like a good maiden race that I printed out the other day. The third, 6 furlong, maiden special. And Chad sends Subsidize, who made first start at Monmouth and looks like he's moved forward since then. This is an Into Mischief colt, bred by Macmer Hall. Stidham has got a Godolphin homebred debuting, Wilton. We asked Steve Asmussen, one of the reasons this race came up was because Black and Tan, and we asked Steve yesterday about Black and Tan, who we liked in there. The Generazios with Louis Carvajal, Tis Handsome. This is a nice little group. Jerry Hollendorfer has got a Super Saver in here. Super Wise. And actually, out of Royale Michelle, who I think has got some stake quality to her in her career, that name kind of rings a bell. Stidham's also got an upstart in here, and of course, upstarts have been firing. John Stevens. I mean, this is a really nice group. Kelly Breen with a Gary Mary West homebred, Mineshaft, Top Gun Tommy. Kent Sweezy with the McLean's Music debuting here off of a Bullet. I'm telling you, this one, what time's this race? Make sure we, 1:42 tomorrow. The Monmouth third should be very good. And they got a nice card overall, actually, if you're looking for midweek action. New York, we don't get back to New York until Friday after the Monday of action, the Monday holiday. So a few things. Let me get set up before we take a break and tell you what else. I did reach out. I told you that I wanted to reach out to Scotty Allen, and I did. And he's going to join us in hour two. And Allen, with a big win with the 7-year-old Awesome Faith, it should be a fun conversation, and a Breeders' Classic win in the West Virginia on Saturday night. So I'm looking forward to that. And Richie as well. And I think we've got Dale Romans and Shug and a bunch of other things. So actually, Case, let's take a break early here and take a little music. And I'll give you a couple of things as we head out that we're saving. And all right, that I'll save too for the Keeneland conversation too, because you got the Sycamore on Thursday, but tomorrow they pick back up as well, and nice card there. So I gave you that. Oh, I got to mention one. Note. I saw where Perry Utes, who just is ageless, just unbelievable. He passed Chris McCarron over the weekend to become the sixth leading rider in history. Pretty amazing, and doesn't seem to have any interest in in retiring either. He is an ageless wonder. And if you didn't see there's a really nice clip. This is where I saw it with Gabby, and he said he still gets the same thrill, the same butterflies winning, that he still has got that same the same satisfaction and thrill in terms of what keeps somebody going at age 66. It's amazing. Perry Utes. Take a break here, come back, lots to do at the races, Sirius XM.
It's At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
From BRL Equine, the people that bring you EPO Equine, Unlock, and Bleeder Shield, now comes Flexify HA, the most advanced scientifically based joint supplement on the market. To find out more, contact me, Joseph Vellante, at 215-501-6880. To be the best, give them only the best. BRL Equine.
World's only accredited equine business.
Our Pennsylvania breeding program was, of course, impacted by the pandemic. Now, with our country getting back to work, we'd like to again talk about our program, the best in North America. Our breeder awards will remain up to 50% for PA-sired PA breds. Owner bonuses will also stay at up to 40%. Restricted races will again be run at all three PA tracks, and PA Day at the races will return. I'm Brian Sanfratello. For more, please visit PABred.com.
Back to At the Races with Steve Bick on Sirius XM Radio.
Hey, what's the matter? Nothing's the matter. That's why I can't leave my house. You must get lonely. No, I don't get lonely. So that's why I can't leave my house. Well, head into the city, well, I guess you can't hurt. Nothing's on the television, on the networks. Take me out of context, take me out of here. Put the windows down, scream it out, really tune it out. There's something going on, but I don't know where. Playing with your telephone, you're playing with your hair. The record seems broken, yeah, really don't care. Put the windows down, scream it out, really tune it out.
Do it again. Do it again.
We're back at the races, bottom of the hour. Going to visit in from Meg at the top. I don't know if you saw a little update on the distaff that Brad Free offered, a conversation with Bob Baffert, and a bit of an interesting development, because Fighting Mad is not going to make the distaff. Baffert kind of wasn't happy, obviously, with her performance in the Zenyatta, and that is significant, because it takes some of the pace potential out of the front end, and it'll be interesting to see if anybody makes an adjustment and rethinks. I mean, you know, the obvious, the first horse you think of. I mean, if Baffert's not going to run Fighting Mad, then, you know, does he reconsider Gamine for the mile and the eighth? I mean, I think we kind of want the Gamine Serengeti Empress head to head in the filly and mare sprint. I think we're all kind of counting on that at this point, right? No Fighting Mad. Cross her off your list. Which, right now, Monomoy Girl and Swiss Skydiver, and that takes some of the pressure off of, particularly for Swiss Skydiver. That's a fairly positive development, I would think. Looking at the rest of the group that's involved here. Harvest Moon, Ollie's Candy, Valiance, Horologist, Point of Honor, Dunbar Road. This is what I've got. Vexatious, CC, Speech. Waiting for some decisions from a few camps, too. Yet, toward the distaff, but I wanted to get that one in because I was changing. I you try to go through these Breeders' Cup possible probables, and like adding Mr. Freeze, and I'm anxious to hear from Dale and his thoughts. It's funny, we'll let Dale riff on this. My notion with him, would they consider the sprint with Mr. Freeze? And a lot of people kind of feeling like the sprint is ripe for a fresh face. And Mr. Freeze, you look back to that effort in the Gulfstream Park Mile, one turn, and it's his career best. So I don't know when the last time. I'm just my PPs from Saturday with Mr. Freeze is limited to, it goes back to mid 3-year-old year. So I don't see where the last time he sprinted, but I don't know. We'll see what his thoughts are. And, it's funny, after we talked to Steve Asmussen yesterday, there was, the widespread speculation about what Nashville might do. And I thought that, I saw where he was quoted in some other places, and I got the sense that he was pretty ambivalent about running Nashville in the sprint. So, right now you're looking at Yaupin and Echo Town. I brought up Echo Town with him too, obviously. You know who's lost in the conversation, and we didn't talk last week to Pat Biancone about the Phoenix win for Diamond Oops, but Diamond Oops feels like one of those horses that you when you overlook, that's when they jump up. Vekoma, of course, Firenze Fire, CZ Rocket, who would have to, get back up into the triple digits. He's been running, a lot of these horses have been running, high 90s. And that's not, that's not what it takes to, typically, to win a sprint. The sprint, it's funny that the sprint, that the sprint has been, over the period, maybe Mike, I'm curious what Mike Welch would think, because Welch has covered it for years, and I don't tell you, again. Tina moved all my American Racing manuals, so I don't have one within reach, but. The advent first of the filly and mare sprint and then the addition of the dirt mile, it really has sapped the sprint from its original, the purity of it from its origin. And of course, filly and mare participation has been, had been for years part of sprint lore. But it just hasn't had the same, it's had nice winners, not to take away from the winners, but it just hasn't had the same distinction. We're going to, Shug's going to join us first, actually, rather than Dale. So maybe we'll look to Dale in, maybe in hour three instead, then case. All right. Yeah, we'll have to. Because we're, between Mig and Scotty Allen, we're kind of locked in. But with you think about it, a horse like Mr. Freeze. I mean, if the Dirt Mile hadn't come along, and the Dirt Mile horses, Rushy and Pirate's Punch and Sharp Samurai, maybe Art Collector, looking at it, Mr. Money, True Timber. Now, K-Nicks go back on the beam, seemingly, and so forth. A lot of these horses would have gone sprint Rich Ringliori sending me a very funny text. Thanks, Rich. Thanks for making me laugh. That's great. And I'm just reaching too for the sprint as we wait for Shug. And we actually not only can we talk to Shug about the win in the Flower Bowl with Civil Union, but we'll get his thoughts about Code of Honor. Out of last week, out of the Kelso run. But here we go. And Shug joins us. So perfect opportunity. And off of the streaking performance of Civil Union in the Flower Bowl, Shug, congratulations.
Thank you, Steve.
I appreciate the opportunity to talk about her. And it feels like she keeps kind of surprising you.
Well, I mean, it was kind of, when I ran her in Florida this winter, I knew she wanted to run far, and I was pretty happy with the race. Jose rolled her and told he moved a little bit soon on her, but then I decided I'd just wait till we got here to Belmont. And I mean, she trained fine and stuff, but she'd never been tested a whole lot, so you know, I was pleased with her allowance race, and then we came back in the River Memories, and, you know, it hadn't, she'd never been in a state before, and, you know, she ran really well there, and then come back into Glens Falls, that's another step forward, and she handled that, and, you know, then obviously Saturday was another big step forward, going from to a grade one, and she handled that very well, too, so, I don't know that I'm altogether surprised, but, you know, you didn't know what was going to happen as you make these progressions.
This performance on Saturday, you know, this group and, you know, the opportunity to win the grade one, talk a little bit about that aspect.
Well, you know, it was a good bunch. It was kind of a varied bunch. You know, Chad had three nice fillies in there, and the fillies that Tommy Albatronis had run good in the Glens Falls, and, you know, this was just kind of the next progression, and we were at home. All we had to do was walk down the street, and she trained well, maybe even better than she had going into the Glens Falls, and, you know, I thought it was a really good opportunity, and, you know, Mr. Allen's always like to take those kind of chances, especially with these homebred fillies that are, you know, got degrees, and you know, to help make those families even stronger, and, you know, we were able to do that with her on Saturday.
Yeah, I saw where, you know, you talked about, you know, turning back and running back for filly and mare turf, and you know, it just feels like, you know, she just kind of keeps going forward, and you know, is this one of those cases where you find the opportunity irresistible, I'd imagine?
What, to go to the Breeders' Cup?
Yeah,
I mean, if she comes out of it good, you know, we're definitely, with it being a win in your end, and, you know, I mean, obviously she's as good as the horses on the in the United States. We haven't run against Mean Mary yet, you know, but, you know, I don't know what the European participation will be, but, you know, she's 5 years old and she's doing well, and, you know, why not take the chance? You only get the opportunities every now and then. So, you know, we're planning on going ahead. If she tells us it's time to go, we'll go. And, you know, she seems to come out of a race really well. The weather's terrible down here. I just walked on a tack this morning, but she seemed to be full of energy. So, you know, hopefully it'll all go right for the next month or so, and, you know, we'll get to go to Lexington.
Gotta love it. And she did run when Chad had her early on in her career. She did run at Keeneland and ran pretty well. You know, one thing that is notable with her as she's, you know, looking at these last four wins is that, you know, she's become very rateable. I mean, she's always or mostly has been involved and has laid close. And here she was much more, you know, much more relaxed. And I'm curious. I mean, how concerned were you, you know, because they, you know, they weren't going fast, and, you know, the turf course has been kind of giving it up to, you know, horses that were in the pace. I mean, I know it's easy to trust in Joelle when it comes from, you know, when it comes to coming off the pace and judging, you know, judging when to move. But it sure seemed like she was taking her time getting involved.
Well, I think Joelle was taking his time getting involved. So I was surprised. You know, I thought that she would be placed, you know, a little bit more forward than she was, but that was Joelle's tactics. And, you know, I remember going down the backside just thinking, I said, well, it would be interesting to see what happens here. And she handled that, and, you know, Joelle rode another great race on her, as Jose Ortiz, two or three times he's ridden her great, too, and just came up with circumstances. But, so, you know, it's not a matter of her being too aggressive. She'll relax fine. It's, you know, it's just a matter of wherever they want them to be. And you know, just been in other races. She'd been laying up close, and, you know, the other day she had the inside post going into that turn, so maybe, you know, maybe it was circumstances. I never had really talked to Jose, I mean, to Joelle about it. But, you know, I'm glad that she would be able to handle that too, because, as you know, in racing, I think there's a lot of different variables that get thrown at you.
Well, she just has, you know, really put it all together. And you know, for Mr. Allen, certainly a nice situation. I mean, to get that grade one black type. And it's funny because he's got this mare, this photograph, and he has only ever bred her to Warfront.
He's got a lot of war fronts, so I guess that much stick. I mean, this filly is, you know, she's a big, strong filly, especially for a war front. I think that's what kind of makes her. A lot of the war front fillies, especially starting off, are smaller ones I had, and they couldn't run. And, you know, now that, you know, he started getting some bigger ones and, you know, they've had it. It's the second grade one winner by Warfront that I've had. It's the third, because I had Datalink, one of the makers, Mark Mile. But
that's right.
As you say, I'm a big Warfront fan.
Well,
in a lot of different ways. Not only that, but I like, you know, they're a little easier to train, you know. They got good minds on her. The ones I've had have been sound. And, you know, I like having them. And, you know, now having the majority of horses for Joe, we're going to have a lot of war fronts. And, you know, some of them are going to be good, I hope, and some of them aren't going to be. But I do like war front. I like training them, you know, because they're very straightforward. They like what they're doing, and you know, in most cases, they run good. But you know, she's been a nice surprise in our stable. And when she came, you know, last fall from Niles, and you know, I hope she'll continue to be that way. And I think that if all things are being equal, he'll probably run her again next year.
Nice.
So that would be pretty nice too.
Well, you know, I'm just realizing as I'm looking at the list of flower bowls, War Flag's a sister of the dam of this horse.
Yeah, I didn't realize that either. I knew it was all the same pedigree, but I didn't know what the situation is. She's got, Wolfie's got a real nice tappet filly yearling that Robbie's breaking right now in Blackwood. So, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on, and you know, that kind of makes it fun when you can help add to some of these pedigrees. And, you know, obviously, you know, those pedigrees going back to the old Darby Dan pedigrees, Andover Way and those things. And, you know, it just looks like to me that whenever a horse pops up, you know, somewhere along the line, you know, you'll look back and there'll be an old pedigree in there, whether it be Darby Dan, whether it be Claiborne. You know, Warfront was Russell Reinemann. We had that filly bought her Starry Dreamer off of Russell Reinemann. Gene Humphrey trained her. And by Rubiano, big gray filly that's kind of stubborn, wanted to run mile and a half. And, you know, they bred her to Danzig, and she got Warfront, who wanted to be a sprinter. So, who knows? But I have learned one thing. When you look back there, those whole families will pop up somewhere in their pedigree in both times.
It's really true, you know, because we have the conversations on Wednesdays with Sid Fernando, and it so often, you know, you'll get to that second layer, you know, the second or third dam, and you see the same, you know, the same premium breeding families that you know, that just come back, and you know, let's be honest, Shug, a lot of times you're involved, a lot of times it's you know, it's Phipps blood, and we see that very often in Claiborne, and you know, it's a big part of the game's history. This is just crazy though, because the mayor photograph was by Unbridled Song. She did not make the races, and then War Flag was about 3 years later. It was about three progeny later after. And also, Lines of Battle was in there, too, who was an international campaigner and ended up in Hong Kong.
Years ago, I came to Louisville for the Breeders' Cup, and there's this little filly walking around the barn there, Stanley Gold had. I asked, I said, who's that? She just came up here from Calder. She's going to run in the two-year-old filly race. I can't remember what her name was. You will when I get into the story. And she won the two-year-old race.
Yes.
The next day she went down and sold at Keeneland. Stronach bought her for $2.1 million, I think. Gave her to Chad. Chad did a great job with her because she doesn't think she was the soundest thing in the world. And but she had, you know, I mean, she was by some son of Awesome again. And but I looked back into the, I said, I've got to look and see where this is coming from. I looked back, and there it was. Third Dam was Claiborne. And, you know, I just, it'll always happen.
Well, and the sire was Awesome, of course, and you know, the Fred Bry, and that was Awesome Feather, that was so good that
that's
awesome. Yeah, and you know, and then you mentioned, you know, going on to campaign for Mr. Stronach, but we talked a lot with Stanley. You know, that whole. That Awesome, of course, and the whole series of, you know, the Fred Bry products, the Jacks Are Better that he's churned out. It's been amazing with, you know, what always looks like on paper, modest pedigrees. But, you know, there's obviously some method to the madness. Well, Civil Union, the latest Grade One winner for both Warfront and for you, and your second win in 17, 18, 19, 4 years. You and Chad just keep winning this race, nobody else.
That's all right. We'll keep it that way.
Let's go back to last week, too, and talk about another Breeders' Cup participant and Code of Honor, and didn't win, but certainly felt like a useful launching point toward the cup for him.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, we're disappointed he lost, but coming up a four-horse field, the winner's a pretty nice horse and kind of had it all his own way. You know, I wish somebody had pulled him along a little farther, but the speed that was up there with him quit, and we had to kind of try to chase him down and sort of made it into a sprint the last part of it, and, you know, he'd gotten the best of it, and you know, so we weren't, except for getting beat, we weren't disappointed in his race. But I'm not too sure of the Breeders' Cups where we're going to head. We might try to, you know, I mean, I'm not counting it out. Cause, you know, he came out of his race terrific, maybe better than he went in. But, you know, I'm thinking that, you know, if you go down there and the Breeders' Cup mile, you draw the outside, you ain't got much chance. And, you know, the mile and a quarter, you know, there's a couple of pretty, you know, improbable is, you know, looks awful good right now. And, you know, I'm sure that there's going to be some others around. And, you know, so there's a possibility that I might go a different route, maybe use the Clark or something and kind of point for the Pegasus. But that's all in pencil, not in pen. So we'll see what happens.
Interesting. It's always interesting to hear, you know, the thought process out loud of you know, the taking a certain direction, and he's coming back for next year too.
I think so. Yeah, everything's right. I haven't heard anything different. You know, that would be sure fun because the schedule, you know, in my admittance, has been messed up because of COVID, and you know, maybe I ran him one time when I shouldn't have run him, but. You know, so next year, hopefully this thing will get itself straightened out to where, you know, our pattern will be a little bit better, but we'll just have to wait and see on that. But I feel confident that it will. And, you know, I mean, laughing, I wish they still had the stymie over at Aqueduct, because that's where I'd run him next. But they don't. You know, trying to get him a little bit easier spot. I mean, you know, even if I go to the Clark, it ain't going to be easy. So, but he is doing good. And like I say, all my conversations just in pencil right now. And, we'll figure it out more as we go. I mean, the weather down here the last couple of days has been so bad that I just walked him under attack the last 2 days. But I think it's going to clear off this afternoon and take it from there. But he came out of his race fine, and, you know, I think we're back on the right track.
Well, we'll watch for the decision process on Code of Honor. Let me ask you, too, about the Preakness weekend, because Dr. Mounty came back, was fourth in the dinner party, and, you know, he had won the Clark, kind of preparing and angling for it after a good 75, 80-day break. What were your thoughts, and where's he turning up?
I'd like to know where he's going to turn up, but he came back and said, Forrest, that he just didn't have that soft turf at all. And, you know, so I think his race wasn't that bad. The first two horses were pretty good. You know, I mean, that was a tough race for a, you know, for a race this time of the year. And so, you know, there's a Lowndes race over at Louisville. I might run him in that, and if he ran good in there, maybe run him back in the River Memories or something and go from there. But I kind of watch the turf a little bit on it. And he could show up at Calder, I mean, at Gulfstream, too.
Well, if you're going to get to Calder, you better do it quick, because the clock is ticking. It's going to be sad.
Mistaken pronunciation. I meant Gulfstream.
No, that's all right. There's nothing wrong. I hear more and more people with the end in with the end being near to racing at Calder. More people are calling it Calder here in the waning, you know, we got about 6 weeks,
waning,
I guess.
Waning moments of Gulfstream Park West.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You must have won your share over at Calder.
Yeah, we had our fun over there.
It was a great little place. Yeah. Tell me about, you got some more of the two-year-olds that are still coming out.
Very pleased with Greatest Honors race the other day. He's learning. The light hadn't gone off yet. I think when I get him stretched out, I think he's going to be a nice kind of horse, and trying to run that horse Scarlet Sky. He's been second twice in his only two starts. And, you know, I've got some others around here that, you know, that we just weather will straighten out and I can get some stuff to do. I've got a half-sister to Confetti here by Nyquist, which is kind of interesting. I'd like to be able to work her out of the gate, and she'll be ready to run. Got a curl and filly I want to run here all three quarters on the grass, and go from there. So, you know, we got some things going on.
Big time. Well, you know, one that I forgot to ask about coming out of Pimlico, you got a nice effort from Vigilante's Way.
Yes, very much so. She'll come up here and probably run in the Winter Memories. I thought she ran very good. I think her progression's been good. And, you know, I think she's a filly that, you know, I'll look forward to running it over to Aqueduct.
All right, time to look ahead to this week, and before we wrap, and tomorrow, the Sycamore, and or Thursday, the Sycamore, with North Dakota.
Yeah, out of the war front.
Yeah.
And been begging to go. You know, it's a big step up for him, but he's been begging to go a distance of ground, so I think this is a good place to try to see if he moves up another notch going farther. And, you know, as I say, it's no easy spot, but he's there, and we're going to give it a whirl.
How about also on Thursday, but at Laurel, you got that Kitten's Joy filly, Mr. Hamilton's homebred, Flanagan's Cove, out of Hungry Island.
Yes. I think she'll eventually be grass, but she's trained good on the dirt at Fair Hill. She's a big, strong filly. She's a bigger filly than Hungry Kitten. And I think she's got a pretty nice future in front of her.
Nice. And we've also got coming up later in the week, I do want to ask you about Performer coming back. And everybody's been kind of waiting and watching for the return.
Well, I've been waiting and watching, too. He's had a lot of ups and downs this year, but he's training very well. I'm glad we got the race to go for him. And, you know, I hope he's on to bigger and better things. You know, it's been a lot. It's been almost a year since he's run, so we'll just have to wait and see what Saturday brings.
If he runs well, I mean, do you just keep him kind of reserved? Is the discovery
probably not a mile?
Nice, very nice. So that's what you got. Of course, he won the discovery, right?
He won the discovery. A mile and eighth over there, so he's run over the track and run well. And, you know, like I say, right now he's doing very well and looks very well. And, you know, this weather kind of got me a little bit messed up on working him again when the race didn't go. But hoping maybe I'll get a dry track on Thursday and I can blow him out a little bit, keep my fingers crossed he's tight enough.
How about Mr. Adams 10-for-10 coming up? Second career start was a good second. This is a frosted colt.
Been training well here. I think the mile and 16th will suit him well. He's a nice kind of horse. He's a nice horse to be around and easy to train and hopefully he can get a victory on Friday.
Well, and you got another frosted, too. This one one of Joe Allen's, and a frosted out of a Stormcat mare that Hinkle Farms had bred, making a second start as well. Tell us about No Ordinary Time.
She's fine the other day. I mean, she's very forward. The other day at Saratoga, she broke really sharp, and she was there. And I think this time you'll probably see her. She'll be forward of the race if she breaks good, but hopefully maybe she can be chasing a little bit and maybe she'll finish up a little better. But I thought her race was good the other day at Saratoga. And I think she's been training really well since she's been up here.
Well, Shug, obviously lots of good things, a whole bunch of two-year-olds that are coming back, and like everybody else, you were a little delayed. There's also some older maidens I see running back, and then there's all the allowance and stake horses. We'll look forward to some decisions, and certainly looking forward to getting to Keeneland. In fact, I booked the hotel yesterday, so we'll look ahead to Breeders' Cup.
We booked one yesterday too, so we're planning on making the trip, and unless she takes a step backwards or something, we're looking forward to the Breeders' Cup and looking forward to going to Lexington.
Shug McGahey, everybody, Claude McGahey on Twitter as well. If you want to follow Shug, I appreciate it. Continued success.
Okay, Steve. Thank you very much.
Always fun, because whenever you talk to Shug, you get to fold in the history and everything that comes with it, with his Hall of Fame resume, Hall of Fame career. And we're going to talk to Rich, but before we get Rich Migliore in, got Larry Letterman. It always works this way, you try to schedule things and then they go sideways in terms of when people can fit you in. So actually Larry called while I was on with Shug, so I tried to quickly get to him. So let me get Larry Letterman in here before Rich Migliore joins us, and we'll get Larry's appreciation. There was no way we were going to do the things we wanted to do with about Barry Abrams, and the relationship that Larry enjoyed with Barry from the harness days, and you know, he was one of the people that we had to include. So we'll wait here a second while Casey raises Larry Letterman and